And of course, from now on, maybe forever, we'll be hearing about fundraising for what has to be one of the best services that we could imagine coming to Northern Ireland. I want to speak to Ian Crowe, who's right across all of this. Ian, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Ian, it's been talked about for a long time. Last night we were watching it on the news. The air ambulance is going to be doctor-led. It's going to have to be supported by the public as well. Not totally supported by the public, but fundraising will be ongoing. When will we actually see the air ambulance in the sky?
Well, the plan is that it will be with us within probably 6 to 8 weeks. We are in a situation where, as it was announced yesterday, but we've been working on it for some time now, that the operational base, the helicopter, will be based at Maeslong Cache. We're converting an old building there that's in really, really good condition. And we're doing some minor building works in that. So that should be ready in about 3 weeks' time. And then it's down then to NIAS, the ambulance service, to staff it. And we have a couple of weeks' training for paramedics and doctors to familiarise themselves with helicopter flying because they are members of the crew and they're very, very important to the aviation aspect of it. So we're expecting probably 6 to 8 weeks.
Is there going to be another one based out west?
There is a primary helicopter which will be in operation up to 12 hours a day and daylight hours. So that's really, you know, the stage we're at now. If we imagine it would be about 8 or 9 hours maybe. And then in the summer it will be up to a maximum of 12 hours. The secondary helicopter is there as a backup because as you appreciate, helicopters can be a little bit, they need a lot of high maintenance. And from time to time they will be down getting overnight maintenance. So that is why the secondary helicopter is there. So rather than having to fly it over from England each time, we will have it based in St Angelo in Enniskillen. It will just be pulled into the Maes end to give service relief and maintenance.
So the 12 hours a day sitting at the Maes, and please God there will be many, many days when the air ambulance isn't needed. The doctor, the paramedic, the pilot, I have this, I almost visualise in my mind something like from World War II because I'm thinking of the Maes and this hangar out there and there's a real state-of-the-art helicopter and there's a lovely sunny day and there's a doctor sitting on a deck chair and there's a paramedic and there's a helicopter pilot and they're sitting and they're sitting and they're sitting and nobody ever calls them. You know, surely it can't be like that.
In fairness, no, I think that's what people would imagine. But, you know, we see it in television, and this is one of the things that the recent television programs have really educated the public. Sure, they see a lot of fun in the base and doctors, and it is a team atmosphere. You've got the pilot, the engineer will be there, the paramedic, there'll be a paramedic manning an air desk, and there will be doctor there. And you think, yes, are they sitting around? Is that a really good, useful of their time? However, there is a lot of training that they do. There's a lot of medical training and keeping up to date. There's a lot of reading. There's a lot of records. So I have been assured, because I actually brought that subject up, I have been assured that they will not be sitting down having cups of coffee all the time, that they are constantly training. And, of course, too, in Maeslong Cache, there will be a rapid response vehicle that the medical crew can hop in because if, for instance, there's an accident just down the road on the motorway or whatever, or if there's heavy traffic or fog or something like that where the aircraft will be tied up and can't take off, the rapid response vehicle will serve the purpose there and the doctor and the paramedic will get to the scene as quickly as possible in that.
Yeah, you see, if they were based, say, at the Royal and they were flying off a helipad at the Royal to go to a variety of places, the doctor and the other staff could be busying themselves in a real environment. Out of the maze, I can't think of a more boring place on earth to spend a day when you're not doing too much.
Believe you me, I think whenever, you know, I would let doctors say this themselves, but, you know, as we all know, doctors are really, really in heavy demand in their emergency departments. So I dare say some of them will enjoy a break. You know, realistically, the consultants that are going to be there are going to be working one shift and maybe 10. So it will be a quite welcome break and maybe a little bit of de-stressing. And what's going to be nicer than flying around Northern Ireland in a helicopter than getting to the scene of a trauma and helping save someone's life?
And how does it work? We see it on the TV where the helicopter is going to be called in. For example, something's happened on a motorway. The police close the motorway. The helicopter lands on the tarmac. It's all very dramatic. What about if you're up or down the country? Do they just go into farmers' fields? Is it just like the way the army used to land? Or do you have to cordon off an area, and health and safety is of prime importance?
Yes, of course, health and safety is of prime importance. Yes, you described that quite well. They can, under HEMS exemption within aviation.
What's HEMS?
Law. HEMS, Helicopter Emergency Medical Service.
Okay, right.
So the helicopter, when it's flying to or from to a hospital with a patient on board, they have what's called HEMS exemption. So they can land on a motorway, obviously under strict control. They can't just put it down in the middle of cars. It will be blocked off either by police or other ambulance crew there or whatever. But it can land in a farmer's field. It can land anywhere else under that exemption. The only higher exemption than that is military and police. So it's well up there and it can do. But this is what I stated earlier on, that the medical crew and the paramedics are trained in the aviation aspects and navigation, and they are the eyes and ears of the pilot when either taking off or landing, because such as rural networks and city ones, there are obstacles like lampposts, like overhead cables and buildings, and loose objects. So it is pretty tricky, but they're masters at it.
I saw a couple of examples recently where the police helicopter intervened and probably saved a life by ferrying someone very quickly to hospital. But how often would you expect the air ambulance to be needed? If we based it on the last 2 years, how busy would it have been in Northern Ireland?
Well, I think what we can base it on is similar population in other counties in England. We're estimating that it will be 1.6 a day, so between 1 and 2. And I guess, you know, that's down to the length of the hours that we're on duty with it. So say in the summer, but obviously the roads are maybe a little bit safer, but maybe more congested. It could be twice in the winter. It obviously could be twice as well with the more hazardous conditions. But as you said earlier on in your introduction, let's hope that the trips we give patients to it are kept to a minimum.
Have you already had bookings from the media to travel with you on some of the early flights?
We've had several requests, and I think there's some work being done there just to see about the possibility of our very own 999 emergency program documentary on it. So we look forward to that because, again, as you mentioned earlier on, this service will be sustained by the public fundraising. And we know it has already started. It's been going out for about 8 or 9 months, the fundraising. And although we haven't been totally proactive in it, the response from the general public has been absolutely fantastic. And people are coming in from amounts of £100, £200 right up to the highest we had was £33,000. And that was from the farmers' market in Market Hill before Christmas. They held a farmers' auction, and people were donating livestock and parts for farm machinery and such like that. And it was a fantastic response in an hour and a half to raise 33,000. Those kind of responses are going to be needed every week to sustain this. It's £2 million we need to raise every year. And we're quite confident that'll come through. It's a big number, but it'll be certainly challenging.
What does government budget give you?
From the point of view of actually public funding, that will come in lieu of providing the medical cover for it. It will provide all the machinery, all the equipment that we need, and more importantly, the doctors and the paramedics. The actual aviation side of it, the running of the helicopter, the fueling of it, the paying for the pilots, the paying for the maintenance, the paying for the base, and the covering, obviously, the executive staff to raise the money that are professional fundraisers. So that's the charitable aspect of it. But listen, we're all looking forward to it, and hopefully you'll see us on the air within maybe 8 weeks.
Yeah, we got to think about it the way we think about hospice, don't we? Because we support hospice and we never know when we would need hospice. It's the same with the air ambulance. You might have this impression, actually, I'd never need that. Boy, you don't know when that bird could be coming out of the sky to save your life.
Exactly, and I think that's where it will affect all communities, both city and rural communities. I heard a statistic somewhere along the line from some of the other air ambulances in England that within 5 years, every family or every person will know someone that has been airlifted, whether that's been life-saving or limb-saving or brain-saving. Someone within 5 years will know of a family member, a family or a friend of a family that will have been saved by this. So this is the way it stretches across. And again, you know, a helicopter and a helicopter emergency medical service doesn't discriminate on who is there. Whatever type of injury that is life-threatening, which is called Category A, or if, for instance, if someone is at risk of losing a limb or a severe head injury, those are the type of calls that it will be tasked to.
Has there ever been any evidence of the helicopter arriving and actually adding to the dilemma, adding to the problem, because the victim was so afraid to actually get into the helicopter?
Certainly I have no knowledge of that. And again, talking to other of the charities in England, Scotland and Wales, I don't think that has ever been flagged up. But listen, you know, they're doing loads, there's thousands and thousands of calls that they're doing every year. So I would guess, yes, people do panic a little bit. As you say, fortunately, I have not been in that situation where I would have needed one. But I think if it's a matter of the helicopter saving my life, and whatever sedation would be in, I would say they'll find a means of getting you peacefully onto that aircraft.
Yeah, that's part of the skill. You don't yet have the helipad at the Royal. That's about 9 months away. In the meantime, you're going to land at Musgrave Park, where the military used to land. Is that right?
Yes, the idea is for the health service to provide a major trauma centre, and that has been part of the ongoing work that the Department of Health have been doing, and the Belfast Trust is getting the Royal Victoria Hospital ready for. It will be a slight increase in numbers. Obviously, these patients are being treated anyway. It's not as if to say it's going to encourage extra patients. But at the moment now, some of the patients are being taken to the regional hospitals and then maybe on for onward transfer, depending on the type of injury. But it is intended, I think, that the majority of the patients will be sent to the Royal Victoria Hospital for attention there with their trauma team. So, yes, they will be landing at Musgrave Park or Belfast City Airport and transferred. So that's the only unfortunate part about it. It's not as slick as operation as you would like. As what it will be whenever the helipad is commissioned at the Royal. But we are where we are in that, and I think the medical crew will be all up for that and starting to save lives in Northern Ireland.
It's exciting and a great way to honour the memory of Dr. John Hines.
Of course. But we myself and one of the other trustees were fortunate enough to meet John about 10 days before he lost his life a couple of years ago. And we had a all but too brief conversation for about an hour and a half with him, but we understood where he was coming from. That followed the Northwest 200, I think, 2 years ago, where he treated a young lady called Violet McAfee, who was hit by a motorbike that was hurled into the air. And Violet, and again, through of this is a great example of how people then engage with air ambulance and start raising funds. Violet has been a tremendous supporter of air ambulance, and I'm in constant contact with her. And she is running a charity cycle on the Sunday before the Northwest 200 this year. I think there's going to be a fun cycle for around about 20 miles, and there's going to be one for 40, 60, and then I think 90 miles along one of the most beautiful coastlines in Northern Ireland, if not the world, around that Causeway coast. So we're hopeful there. Violet's hopeful that she will get maybe around about 600, 700, 800 cyclists, all raising money for air ambulance. So it's a great opportunity. So I would urge any keen cyclist that wants to have a fun cycle or a good 90-mile challenge in aid of air ambulance, that's one of the ones they want to keep an eye out for.
Ian, good speaking to you and every success with it. Thanks for your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Ian Crowe is the chairman of AANI Air Ambulance.